Turuntuset tulee Joonel.
Today we are going to talk about communication design. To introduce the topic, it seems that it's one of the trending things that our marketeers don't know much, and we seldom hear. We talk about design and communication, but putting them together makes a completely different field. So let's start, Bonne. What is communication design that you have researched so much about?
Yes, well, I think it's important to note that there's still quite a lot of confusion in our own field about communication design and its relationship to graphic design. And to begin with, graphic design, it's often interchangeable with the term visual communication, but it really is just visual problem solving through the use of type and image and space and color. So there are certain devices and history and a kind of craft that comes out of the practice. But communication design broadens that, and it shares with graphic design this preoccupation with expression or visual expression of ideas. But it's also systematically and tangibly constructing the means to transmit and connect information between people or places or things or any kind of combination of that. So it becomes a little bit more preoccupied with the systems of communication and the shape that those systems take, or the combination of shapes that those systems take. It is a systems-based practice, and of course it's always interested in innovating. So looking at those spaces and those kind of invisible connections.
Can you bring me one good example how we see the perfect communication design in our everyday life?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not sure about perfect because it's always changing.
Okay, you know, it's not perfect, but yeah. At least a bit perfect, let's say so.
Right. Well, I think when if you look at well, for instance, a piece of communication design I've been using every day is an app for this little device on my hand called a Fitbit. And, I bought this Fitbit so that I could track my own exercise and that I could, not only would it count so many steps that I did in one day, but then it would tell me what I did yesterday and the day before, and I could have a kind of program of physical activity. But what I realized was the app that works alongside with this device allows me to network into other people, and I have a very small network. It really is just my two sisters and my brother, but it becomes this way of communicating with my family that I didn't actually expect. And so while we've while we sort of compete against each other in terms of how many steps you can take in a day and that sort of thing, but I found I've had very meaningful conversations with my sisters through this app and through the little messaging, and it somehow has seamlessly integrated a conversation into my day that I really didn't expect. And so to me, it's this wonderful system of communication design. It's a device. It is we have some interaction design happening in terms of how this device actually communicates with the application itself on my cell phone. But there's also this other kind of interface design that allows me to actually I think partake in some of the activities on my own terms. And so I've often been thinking about this app as an excellent example of communication design, but also an excellent example of how design is very interdisciplinary. So you're not just stuck in this kind of two-dimensional world. You start to think about reaching across different aspects of industrial design and product design and interaction design to fully integrate and create experiences.
So it's not only about creating a good app.
That's right. Yeah, it's about creating a good experience. Now, my colleagues would tell me I'm treading into dangerous territory about with interaction design and the territory that other designers like to take. But because communication design is really solely interested in methods of communication, we can talk about that overlap quite confidently because we're not tied down to the shape that the communication takes. It's not just a poster or a pamphlet or a logo, that kind of thing. We can talk about the shape of experience.
How do you do it? How do you shape the perfect experience?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is where I think I see the practice of communication design changing and maturing in a new way. The shape is going to be, is really going to rely on research and new methods of research. So rather than having information handed to designers like demographics or psychographics or aspects of research that perhaps marketers are very well versed and experienced in, communication designers are starting to do more ethnographic practices and want to speak directly to people who would be the end users of the products that they're helping develop. So they would start to develop what is called a participatory design methods. So they would take, they would in the very early stages, they would talk to people that they feel would be ideal as end users. They work with them through a series of problems. They have in-depth conversations, and they start to develop a profile out of that, and they start to identify specific insights that perhaps individual experiences would only reveal. So to have these kinds of narratives, like somebody making a personal connection with their family through an exercise app, maybe that may not be revealed if you are just looking at sheer demographics and only looking at, say, people who are interested in getting healthier, people who are interested in losing some weight, or people who are interested in just simply tracking their progress. So, through those kinds of early connections and research, the expectation is that something will be revealed in the process that will give designers a special edge in developing something that is worthy of marketing.
Very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. I think that from my side, I've been in the marketing for more than 20 years now. It seems that we always have tried to find out the kind of more than just the demographics about the people. And now it seems that the designers come with pretty similar ideas, understanding that this part is really important, isn't it?
It is. And I think it's great if people are starting to come to similar conclusions about their own practices and start to see where you can build these groups, these working groups. So, I think there used to be a little bit more of a linear process in terms of designers working with marketers, where marketers would come up with specific strategies and they would do a lot of research and they would have all of the data. And then they would bring that to the designer to interpret. But, I think there's some meaningful conversations missing, in that process. And, if you start to look at even, I've mentioned the Fitbit app, but if you look at some of the top apps in the last year that are just in the U.S. alone, all of them actually are sophisticated systems of communication. I mean, there's Facebook and YouTube and Google Play and Facebook Messenger and so on. And, not only do those apps understand how to build systems where you can allow people to exercise self-expression, but they've built up, they give people this agency to to comment on other people's submissions or to build personal networks or to share information or understand, you know, that it that they can express themselves in all sorts of different ways. And, you know, I think it takes good design, really, to be to understand how to let people express themselves and to kind of show them the possibilities of their product.
Absolutely.
You know, I think when I started practicing communication design myself 23 years ago, I don't think I would have ever dreamed about this new space that people could be working on. It's really exciting.
Where did you start? What was the time then?
Well, I started in the early 90s, and I worked in a corporate communications firm. So we worked a lot with annual reports and specific kind of reporting out with resource-based companies. So I cut my teeth more in the corporate world, and when I got my fill of that, I moved into another design firm where I worked almost solely on arts groups. And I could see the similarity in problem solving. You know, I think the client, in a way, didn't really change too much at the time. You know, whether you're arts-based or corporate-based, there was still this extreme caution, I would say, in terms of how... In terms of how much independence they allowed the designer to really present back to the client what they thought was appropriate for them, and I think it probably varies in different cities and different parts of the world. But in Vancouver, it was quite a very conservative group at the time, and you could really start to see the frustration of many designers that there has to be a little bit more leeway in allowing people to think a bit more independently and to discover more possibilities in what their design can do, rather than just simply fill an order or respond to the status quo. Basically, you know, everybody. All the big corporations have an annual report, and the annual report takes a certain kind of shape. So, you know, the demand would be that, well, we should respond in the same way, rather than really saying what shape should a report be. Should it all, you know, does it all have to be printed? What is the messaging we want to say to your audience? What is the best way to communicate that?
Absolutely. You told about the need of the analysis and the research. May I ask, what do you do with the research and the results what you get? How do you get the insight from all the data you gather?
Well, I think part of that is still part and parcel of the creative process. So I think the hardest part about gathering research is trying to figure out how do you start making a leap to making something or being creative with that research. But often designers will research and they will ask their end users very specific questions, but at the same time they might ask somebody who is not necessarily that expressive themselves. They might hand their research participants a camera and they might say, can you take a picture of 10 things that are interesting to you? Or can you tell me what, if I give you $10, what would you spend this money on today that would respond to a certain kind of problem? And so they ask their participants to start demonstrating certain small little acts. And I think generally the kind of research process this is involved with is called a design probe. So designers are kind of probing to see if they're in the right direction or if there's an active expression that they can actually use as a way of starting the entire project. And they might very well do this several times before something really starts to catch. And so in the overall creative process in design, we do what's called divergent and convergent processes. So the divergent is you start to do as many things as possible, make 100 drawings, ask 100 people, do some silly little things, play around with some ideas, and produce content. And then at some point in the divergent phase, you say, okay, what is really good here? What can we use? What is interesting? You know, this involves more than one person. You have to get some feedback and some critique, but you would start to pick what are some directions that are interesting out of that 100. So, you know, you narrow it down to 30 and you develop those 30 ideas and they become a little bit more divergent again, and you keep converging on these ideas till you narrow down to something that is actually manageable and interesting, and it starts to really respond specifically to some of the problems and challenges of the project. And, you know, it's a constant dialogue about the work, and it is and it requires a team of people, you know, so, and not just a team of designers. It really does require client input. It requires the marketer's input, you know, anyone else who might even be remotely connected to the project. You know, the communication designer should be able to facilitate those voices, and the earlier they can facilitate those voices, I think the richer the solution is in the very end of the project.
Absolutely. Can you give me a good example about that? How does it work in real life? Maybe some of your students have done something kind of very special with a really good result.
One really excellent project we had was a recent student in our Masters of Design program, and she had been really struggling. She had wanted to do, she wanted to work in the field of health, and she was developing a thesis around healthcare and trying to develop maybe an app or a system of communication for people who were disabled in some way and required constant healthcare. But wanted to have a certain level of independence. And she really struggled for quite some time, and her fellow master students really challenged her on some of her assumptions and were quite critical of the direction she was taking, because she came at it and said, well, I want to develop an app. And they had, you know, everyone had said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Why are you even talking about the shape of this yet? You know, back up. So, you know, she had gone around the block, and she had, because she had this end result in mind, it really made her stuck. And the ironic part of this was that she had been working with her own father at the time, her father was a caregiver for her mother, who was quadriplegic. And so she had firsthand a lot of information, but in a way, this personal information seemed to be clouding her progress in so many ways. In the end, you know, through a series of other kind of community consultations, she was trying to ask people who, you know, who would be a part of a group at a community center along with her mother, who were had different levels of issues, health issues, and required constant care. And she realized through this process of dialogue that it wasn't really the end user for whatever it was she was trying to discover was not people like her mother who were in wheelchairs and who required help. It was the caregivers themselves who were actually, who were showing up for these research sessions and sort of standing aside and in the off hours having discussions about how truly difficult it is to be able to connect with other people who are facing some of the same issues, how lonely it can be to be a caregiver, how hard and difficult the work itself is, and how emotional draining it is, because often, they're caring for somebody very close in their family. And so she realized that she was talking to the wrong group the entire time. And she refocused her efforts and started developing, trying to make tangible a network of caregivers and trying to imagine what that might look like. So
wow.
It an app definitely was featured in this, but it was also like she developed a card, like a little plastic card that you might get, at a coffee shop or at a department store, like that you get for points. But in this case, it was a card that would give you free coffee at the community center. And there would be certain times where you could come and get a free cup of coffee, that everybody would be there. And so it would start to facilitate, like-minded people who could come together, who could make some friends, who know exactly what they're going through, and to make some deeper connections. And there were, she had made this app that would allow people to share informations about good doctors and good remedies and better pharmacies. And so really what it was just starting to make tangible, how does one isolated person talk to another isolated person? And how do you start to make them feel better and encouraged about this daily, very emotionally draining task that's before them? So, it's an excellent case study. I hope she writes it down at some point as a case study.
At least you have told it now, so yes. She can come and listen and
exactly.
I use the part. Very good. It's very good example about really what the field about communication design can do and what it is about. But tell me now, if I take a company, how can a company or an organization mostly benefit from communication design? How could they use it?
Well, I think that's a really big challenge, I think, because, many companies, I think, are very impatient in this process, and it's going to require a bit more education to work with clients and at this kind of level. And I should note that not all corporations or companies may be interested in working this way, but there's getting companies to understand that there is a there's an early process of discovering information that will be infinitely valuable in the future for them. And so if they understand that the information that's collected, it's not just great for one project moving forward, it becomes this kind of database that you can keep dipping into or keep updating. And one of the best examples of this is it's a little bit dated, but there's a really well-known firm in United States called IDEO. And IDEO works with a lot of really, really high-end corporate clients, including the Bank of America. And they were working with the bank. This was actually, I think, in about 2006, so it is quite dated. But it's such a great example. And they were working with the bank about trying to attract and retains members of a certain kind of demographic. So I think it was mostly women, younger women with children. And but when they were starting to talk a little bit more deeply to the demographic they were trying to target, what they found was in the practices of banking, these women always rounded up to a higher number when they paid their bills. And they did it for lots of ways, for lots of reasons. Some of them were just convenience, making sure they cover their bills. But if they had a bill that ended in 57 cents, they'd round it up to that higher dollar. And they also found that people were, the same people who were rounding up their money were having difficulty saving any extra money from that. So instead of just coming up with a kind of an advertising campaign that would maybe attract these women or speak to them directly in some sort of way, what they realized was they needed to develop an actual program at the bank that would actually service these people in a different way. And so they had a program, I think it was called Keep the Change. And basically it meant anytime that they a bill was going to be paid through the bank would round it up to the nearest dollar, have their client pay the bill, and then they would keep the amount between what was rounded up and what the bill actually was, they'd stick in a savings account. And so they'd start doing these, saving these little pennies and tiny amounts for people. But it what it did was people could actually see some incremental progress in terms of savings. And that meant a great deal to them. And they, they ended up attracting, you know, a couple of million new customers based on this program alone. It was just was so amazingly successful. So it was, to me, I keep bringing that up because, you know, a corporation like a bank is really doesn't necessarily, you know, those are powerful clients. They don't necessarily have to follow a designer's idea. And quite often they don't. But it's a great example of when they do and when they actually work with the designer and accept the kind of research, ultimately it's amazingly successful for them.
By the way, I remember it was some years later, probably somewhere 2010-11, if I'm not mistaken, the same thing was done in Estonia by one bank. And it's really funny. They never told that they were copying the idea from a bank, but they told that they invited it themselves. And it might be also because they had also good good designers working with a bank. Maybe the kind of the type of ideas are in the air.
Right, right, absolutely. And who knows, the way that some design firms operate too, you know, it could have been this was already brewing, right? It was already an idea that was out there from other banks or from, you know, that had been tossed around very early in the process. So it's hard to know, you know, where those ideas come from. But I think it's an excellent idea. I'm glad to hear that it is in Estonia. I don't know that it's in Canada, though.
Yeah, but it was very successful in Estonia, really. It was successfully launched and it was really popular. Probably is currently as well, but after launch, it really people felt that it's an important service or important notice. Mm-hmm. So it's a really good example about good design. What I also wanted to ask that what should marketing people know about the communication design, and is it only about the, let's call, product development phase they need to know it, or are there any other things they need to pay attention to as well?
Well, I think designers now, I think they are should be known by now for asking really excellent questions, and a good designer should be asking very excellent questions all the time throughout the process, and a really good designer should be able to work with a marketer at any step in the process. Really, I think designers are really very good at working in teams. I think they require a lot of feedback. I think designers are very resilient in the face of criticism. I've seen some remarkably resilient designers. And I think, you know, to me, so for me, as we've already been talking about, the most important aspect is it's for marketers to understand that designers really do want to be a part of the conversation about strategy because they really do feel they have something to offer. And that designers are willing to drill down to a specific example or specific interaction as a starting point for understanding a broader area or a broader demographic of people. And that they're also driven by narratives. So what are the stories of people who are having experiences? And then how can we extract that into either into data or into ways of discovering more about the challenge in front of you? So I think, if there's one or if there's a couple of takeaways for marketers in this, it's keeping the lines of dialogue open at all aspects of the process, to involve designers as early as in the process as possible, and to get designers to ask more questions in the early process, and don't be afraid to be a part of the critique and to offer critical reflection at all stages in the design. I mean, don't wait for that big reveal or that big final presentation. You know, I think those days, in a way, are almost finished for designers. They want to reveal more about the project as they go along. You know, that final reveal, in a way, feels more superficial to them than the process itself. So hopefully that creative process will help inspire the marketer in the way that they approach their work. And then hopefully the designer can also learn from the marketer by involving them in the early process.
Absolutely. But now we started our discussion with a difference between communication design and graphic design. Mm-hmm. But if I have a graphic designer, what skills should the graphic designer develop in order to become a communication designer?
Right. Well, you know, a good communication designer is going to have all of those excellent graphic design skills. So they should be very visually astute. They should be good art directors. They should understand good typography and composition. They should have a very sophisticated, what we call a visual vocabulary. To expand into being a good communication designer, we want those designers, again, to ask very good questions, to develop a way of critically analyzing their own work, to be able to research with integrity and ethically, and to learn research methods in order to be able to do that. And then to be able to be driven by that information, not just be driven by the shape or the form of the work itself. So to be able to say, well, here's the problem before me. What is the best shape that problem can take, rather than already come at it saying, well, somebody has told me to design a website and to take this problem into consideration as a designer website. So to really look at, to analyze the situation and to say, is this really the best direction? And how do I know it's the best direction to go in?
So you develop communication designers in... Mm-hmm. In the university, what
yes.
are the main courses you teach them?
Right. Well, one of the things that we do at the very beginning of the communication design program is we begin their program having them work in interdisciplinary groups with other communication designers, industrial designers, interaction designers, and we have them collaborating right away. So we have them working in groups. We have them discussing challenges and ideas from their own perspective and from their own anticipated practices. And all the while, we also have, of course, we have required courses of design history and certain theory. And specific skill-based studios. So communication designers, of course, are taking typography. They're making sure their computer skills are very are high, and they can function at a very high rate. But at the same time, again, we're emphasizing research as a basis for all of their work, and we use project-based or practice-based types of methods in our studios. So. Again, we would assign students an area to work in. So we might be very broad and say, we want to look at issues of transportation in our city, and we want you to tell us where are there challenges of transportation, and how do you intend to address that? So you might have everything from students looking at wayfinding in a subway station to students looking at traffic circles in the downtown area. So it might be that diverse. Or we could bring in a single client and say we want to work a little bit more specifically in an area. But again, through research, you start to tell us where the issues actually lie and the problems start to reveal themselves and tell us how you want to start solving those problems. So again, by the end of this, we hope that we don't see any two students that are really alike. They develop their skills based on the interdisciplinary pathways that they take. So a lot of them really enjoy working with industrial designers and they like to collaborate as much as possible. And then we have other students who just drill down very deeply and are very communication design oriented and very graphic and very similar to graphic design and develop a portfolio of work that is really about methods of communication and the shapes that they take. And so, we often say if we actually see in our final graduation exhibit, if we actually see two student projects that are very much alike, then we haven't done our job.
Very good. And my very last question for this part comes from a bit different field. I would like to ask, what do you think, how should communication design be used in public organizations?
Well, I wanted to ask you, do you mean sort of like charities or nonprofit organizations, or what do you mean by public?
I mean more, let's say, governmental organizations.
I see.
Ministries.
Right. I think I have a lot to say about this for Canadian government organizations, because I think we've actually fallen behind a bit in the possibilities for where design could actually help. I have a funny feeling Estonia is ahead of us in many aspects. But I think in a way it's similar to any other organizations. I think these public organizations could really work with designers in a collaborative way. I think if they were to engage with us in an early process and focus on a specific kind of problem solving, I would want to see a little bit more data being collected through different aspects of research. But I think there are, very, very similar ways of approaching the needs of a public organization in the same way as a company or a university. I think the process is the same. It really is a discovery process, a creative process that's, divergent and convergent, and starting to develop some real tangible methods of communication that are based on conversations. And I think as far as government goes, I think people, citizens, are really interested in those conversations. Where Estonia, I see Estonia is a little ahead of the game, is I think you have a public policy that's been tabled with your parliament on a design policy. In Canada, we're not even close to developing a design policy. And that's something I think that designers are still really struggling to get acceptance and for government to identify the possibilities of working stronger with or developing stronger connections with designers, but also understanding that design could be a very helpful and integral part of any kind of business development or organizational development.